Welcome to the Snowfighters Institute podcast, featuring conversations with leaders in professional snow and ice management about what's working, what's challenging, and what matters most in our industry. Here's your host, Phil Harwood.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Snowfighters Institute podcast. I'm your host, Phil Harwood, and I'm joined today by Steve Wallace. He's the president of Great Lakes Snow Systems. He is located in the beautiful town of Elgin, Illinois, which I believe is in the Chicagoland area. Is that right, Steve?
That is correct.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about the company and where is Elgin located?
Elgin is located about an hour west of the city of Chicago. So I'm smack dab between Chicago and Rockford.
Okay. Okay. So if you're on 90 going past the airport, a little bit further out from that, a little further west.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So you're way outside, like you're out in the farmland, right?
I mean, so we're right on the edge of where Metropolis turns into farmland.
Okay. All right. Like the last town, and then hold on.
That's right.
Just cross your legs till you get to Rockford, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. All right. That's cool. Well, again, thank you for being here. I'm excited to hear about your journey into the snow business and acquiring this company, Great Lakes Snow Systems, from the previous owner. And we have a lot to talk about. So just maybe just start out by telling us a little bit about the company.
All right. So Great Lakes Snow started in 1990 as just a guy kind of doing snow on the side. The previous owner kind of started doing snow and kind of grew it from there. He was actually in med school when he started company. So he was trying to just get bills paid, and he realized real quick that there's some profit to be made. Some of my experiences come from a lot of his stories, and he said just some of those years where you get ice storms and bigger snowstorms, and he realized that he kind of enjoyed doing that more than he did. So he actually he finished med school but took it on kind of more full-time after that, and then kind of grew the company from there. When I started from the company was in 2006. It kind of started out as a laborer. We only had two or three trucks rolling, and everyone else was a subcontractor. So it was kind of a smaller operation, but it seemed big to a kid that didn't know any better. Great Lakes now is a company that does all commercial, 100% commercial, with municipal mixed in there. So one of our contracts is for the city of Elgin to do the parking lots, and then as well as we do a separate contract for all the cul-de-sacs and dead ends. So that's kind of the heart of what we do. And then all our commercial accounts are kind of built around that. And so we do a little bit of everything when it comes to commercial, retail, industrial, a library, whatever is in that area that we can handle.
Yeah, I want to come back to that city of Elgin work because I think that's really interesting. So when you came on board in 2006, were you brought on to acquire the business, or did that conversation come later?
No. Actually, when I started with the company, I was just a shoveler. So I started shoveling and kind of just grew from there. I started kind of taking on slightly more tasks. One day, a guy in a skid steer, I expressed that I wanted to be in a skid steer. The guy in the skid steer literally quit with the skid steer door open and running, and they were in a panic. Do you want to get in the skid steer? And I'm, of course, got a shovel in my hand, like, absolutely. So I took that opportunity, kind of went from there. The old kind of quote-unquote foreman, there wasn't necessarily official titles back then for the company. So the guy who was kind of running things, he kind of had a falling out. And I kind of just pushed my way in and eventually started kind of running the operation side of the business.
Okay. Who brought up the conversation about you taking over the business?
So it's funny. I still remember exactly where I was and what road we were driving down. And I just happened to be in the passenger seat. We were going to lunch, and I said, hey, these kids were about 10, 12 years old at the time, kind of getting older. You have two boys. And I'm like, are kids ever, you think they're going to want to take over your company? And he's like, no, they have no interest. Actually, they're probably a little older than that. They were in high school at that point. So okay. And he's like, they don't have any interest. I don't want to push him to that. And that's when I expressed to him, I'm like, hey, I'd be interested. And I didn't have a penny to stand on, really, like nothing to show for it or a plan or anything. It was just kind of, and it kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. If you're willing to talk about how that whole deal kind of went, how it transpired, I would love to kind of explore that.
Yeah. So at the time I had throughout the years after 2006, I actually started working in the summertime for an excavating company. So I was working full time for the excavator and then coming on full time for the snow operations. And we continued to have conversations about me taking over the business. And then it turned into, hey, it'll be a 5-year plan. And then it turned into 7 years until, so it was just a lot of back and forth where I just need one more year until I'm ready to sell. And I finally got to the point where I needed to make a decision on if I was going to continue my life being an employee or I wanted to take something over. And me and my wife had conversations. And so I was either going to take over his business or start my own or do something because I felt ready to kind of make that push or just go full time for the excavator because that was turning into a 60-day-a-week deal.
Okay.
And he was getting more work in the winter. So I really had to make a decision. So finally we kind of put all our feelings aside and got things pushed and got an agreement together. And so the way we structured it was a 5-year buyout process basically. So for the next 5 years, I would be paying an amount to him every year as we make the money. And the way I saw it, it was structured beautifully for me because he had skin in the game to make sure that I was successful because his payments essentially relied on it. It kind of worked out for the both of us. And like I said, I at that time I was renting a house. I had my first kid already, second kid on the way. I was just trying to figure out life and it was a tough decision. I didn't have the money or the bank account to just, you know, shoot a big chunk of change towards a company. It worked out. And this is my final year of payment was this year.
Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you.
That'll be nice to have that cleaned up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty of seller financing, especially if there's no kind of like no big lump sum at closing. Because there's obviously the business, as long as the business is profitable, there's money to pay that payment. And, you know, you're not going in debt and you're not having to take money out of your house or hit up your parents or your rich uncle or whatever. The seller has a vested interest in the success of the business. So they're going to stay involved and make sure the transition's smooth and all that. So those are all there's obviously downsides to every deal structure. But no, this sounds like it really worked out well for you guys.
Yeah, it did. But there was definitely some, you know, we had a good friendship, obviously, because we worked together. And there was some hard conversations when the going got tough, I guess. And and actually what sparked some of this and actually what really helped me was Snow Fighters Institute. So he sent me to the original Snow Fighters Institute with John Allen.
Okay.
And I had spoke to John. And after that, of course, John always said, reach out if you need anything. And I reached out to John when this whole thing was going down. And John reviewed all the books. And John came to me and said, look, he's not really that profitable. What he's asking for is way too much. You should ask him for this. So because of John Allen, I was able to kind of renegotiate to a lesser amount because I had no idea what a business was worth. And of course, at that time, when you're trying to buy a business, you got friends and family who necessarily don't know much about the business aspect and trying to give you advice as to, oh my God, that's way too much money. Are you crazy? This, you know, you have all these people there.
That's fantastic. I didn't know that you had done that. Reached out to John. What a great service he did for you.
I still go back and forth because he basically told me it wasn't wise for me to buy it at what I was paying. And even what I ended up paying was more than he thought I should have paid. And I still have his email that he says, you know, I'm here, you're there, you know your gut feeling, go get him.
Yeah.
I actually ran into John at the last time I instituted and kind of gave him an update as to where the business was. And
cool.
He was happy to get the update and I was happy to shake his hand again and thank him.
Business valuation can be all over the place, right? I see this all the time. I read tons of articles and books on selling businesses. Obviously I'm involved in that world myself. So you start out with a scenario where you think the business is worth X, but if there's competition, the valuation changes very quickly. If there's, you know, if it's a competitive situation where there's multiple buyers interested, all of a sudden the valuation can double or triple very quickly. And then you get into all the details and due diligence and the deal structure, and there's every single piece can be negotiated. And at some point it becomes just exhausting, and you just have to say, look, you want to do this or not? You know, the valuation is never going to be perfect. You know, you're never going to get what you want. I'm not going to pay you what you want. We're going to agree on something. It might even not be the right number, but you know, if we just have to trust that there's a good foundation here and we're making the right decision, we're moving forward. And a lot of times that valuation is kind of irrelevant in the grand scheme of things. You went from being an employee to a business owner, and that was a huge step for you. And hopefully, you know, you tell me, I mean, looking back on it, are you happy you did it?
Oh, absolutely. It's funny though, a lot of like winter since I've taken over, and if you would have told me, hey, it's not going to really snow for the next 4 years, I probably wouldn't have bought it. No. So,
all right.
but now here I am, you know, 5 years later, yeah. And we're seeing the end of it, and I'm growing the business and we're seeing the positive.
Do you have any advice for someone who's kind of thinking about maybe acquiring a snow business?
Do your due diligence, make sure the core of the business is structurally sound, and really just take the leap of faith. I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, or if you have that drive, I think you kind of know it inside. And so taking the risk is the gamble, but if you don't, then you never know. And I'm so glad I did, because I would have been that employee for probably the rest of my life. It would have been an interesting dynamic. I don't know where my life would have taken me. Looking at the backside, of course, it was so many hard days and so many days you think I should just go back to being an employee, but it's kind of worth the risk is worth the reward.
Yeah. I mean, for a big part of my working career, I was a W-2 employee, and I knew to the penny what I was going to make every paycheck every year. To the penny, I knew, unless I got a bonus or something, which I rarely got. Companies I worked for just didn't do that. My income was fixed. And then going from that to almost 20 years now, you know, jumping off the cliff and going into the world of self-employment as an independent consultant, it was really scary, but it's been so great. I would never go back. I can't. There's no way I can go back now. So I want to go back. Thank you for sharing all that. I want to go back to 2006. So what were you doing at that point? What kind of jobs were you doing before you got into this?
So I graduated in 2004. I wanted to be a fireman or a police officer when I got out of high school. And then I started community college, and it felt like high school all over again. And I hated high school. I wasn't a good student. I just couldn't sit down at a desk for days. And then, of course, when you get to community college, you're like, oh, you don't have to be here if you don't want to. It's not mandatory. And I'm like, oh, you don't have to be here. Turns out you don't get very good grades when you don't show up to class. So I learned real quick that I was going to have to find something else. And I got a reality check where I kind of bounced from a job that I worked at Discount Tire for a couple of weeks. I worked at a park district to kind of found odds and ends. And it turns out I started working, and I just needed cash at the time. So my neighbor across the street was a landscaper. He was a Hispanic fellow, and I was good friends with his son. He's like, hey, I needed labor for $8 an hour. Do you want to come string trim? And turns out he was the main shoveling crew leader for this Great Lakes snow. So he took me to the guy's house that was in Howard, the old owner. He was building his house at the time. He's actually did some home building on the side. That's how I was introduced to that. And I kind of got into it that way, but we were doing kind of everything, landscaping to home building, to framing, anything a laborer would do. Mm-hmm. And I still didn't think that I don't want a snow company or I don't want a company, but what I was going to do, it just kind of was the day by day grind of being in construction. I was trying to get in the operators union, but around that time, you had to have someone's uncle be a foreman of a company to try to be an operator. And then we had the 2008 downturn. And so trying to find work in construction at all was hard. We were just happy to kind of have some work, and, you know, $8 turned into $10, turned into $12 an hour, turned into 15. And you kind of grow from there. And then that's when the snow side really kind of took off, where I went from a shoveler to an operator to all that. And then the home, in 2008, when the home building kind of took a dump, that's when I reached out to the excavator who was a subcontractor for us in the wintertime. And he needed a laborer. So I went to work for him. I got my CDL. Mm-hmm. I kind of grew that in. And I got this unique experience because Howard, the owner of Great Lakes, was very business savvy. He knew the ins and outs, but he wasn't mechanically savvy. So everything we did was send it to the dealer, send it to the mechanic. Where then when I worked for the excavator, he was an excavator and a farmer. So combine wheel fell off in the middle of the night. We're fixing it. And so it did.
Complete opposite.
So I got this interesting dynamic of what, you know, who am I and what kind of business am I going to run? And so now I think I found that sweet spot for myself to know that there's times that you just need to send it to the mechanic and there's times that, hey, we're going to buckle down and get this done. Mm-hmm. And it kind of led me in the direction I went eventually. It was able to, if I didn't do the excavating side and didn't learn all that, it wouldn't feel nearly as comfortable taking over the business when I did. It was a way to kind of God's plan to kind of prepare me for the future ahead.
Yeah. You had mentioned to me that one of the things that Howard enjoyed about the business is that he had these two sons and it gave him some quality of life, ability to spend time with his family, you know, because it's a seasonal business and it doesn't snow every day in Chicago. I don't know, what's the average snowfall in Elgin? 20 inches or
30, 33.
Oh, it is. Okay,
now it's down to 30. Now it's down to 30 MLS.
But even then, you know, yep. I mean, there's only so many events. So, and you have a family as well, right?
Yeah. So I got three boys of my own and Howard had two boys of his own. And yeah, it's something that every day he would take his kids to school. He would drive them to school. You know, we would get started in the morning doing home building and he would want to get there till, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock and he'd be ready to go. And he really took the time to spend that time with his kids. His wife worked full time somewhere else. So I saw his opportunity and he was always like, oh, I'll take a vacation. And it was very, he was a very kind of nonchalant, lenient on that. And his kids and him had this kind of relationship that I thought, man, that's pretty cool. Because I grew up and my dad went to work before I woke up and stayed at work a long time. And he came home and he was tired and he ate dinner and he went to bed. And kind of, my dad was a CNC machinist. So I saw that side. I thought, man, this is a pretty cool life he gets, that he kind of has an open schedule when most everybody else kind of jams all summer and then takes the winter off when you can't really do anything outside.
Yeah. So what a great example, right? To kind of show you that vision of what life could look like with children. And now you have three boys of your own. So how does that play out in your world? And what about summertime? We didn't talk about that. What do you do in the off season?
Yeah, so in the summertime, I work as a subcontractor. It's funny. So originally when I started working for Howard, it was me and my best friend, Brandon, and we were both the laborers for him. Brandon had his first kid and split off and started his own landscape company. And I continued down the route of being the employee. I worked for the excavator. And so it's kind of come full circle because once I decided to take over Great Lakes, I knew I couldn't do the excavating anymore. I couldn't work 80 hours and try to run my own business. So Brandon was kind enough to reach out and say, hey, I don't do patios. I don't do grading. You have all this experience doing this. Why don't you just take over that side and I'll just feed you the work and you kind of work for me and work as much as you want or as little as you want. And so I did that and it's been a great relationship since then. And so I go work for him and then I get to kind of steal some of his employees in the wintertime, but he uses my employees. And so, yeah. And to follow up with the kids thing, it's been great. It's, you know, not only being a business owner, but having that time in the summer to kind of not be have employees and have to jam on work. And, you know, it's a little more lax so I can take the vacations. I can do a little fishing trip or whatever the kids and family decide. And as the years grow on and the business becomes more successful, the more freedom I have to do that. Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, the business never goes away. It's always there, but you have the ability to be flexible with your time, which is nice. So I want to talk about the city of Elgin contract. So you said you're all commercial and you said, you know, do some retail, industrial, library, city of Elgin. Tell me about this contract. And did this contract come with the business? Was this something Howard sold or did you sell it?
Yeah, so Howard sold it originally. We originally had all the parking lots. So City of Elgin made a decision to have a contractor take over all the parking lots. And it goes out to bid every 4 or 5 years. It's a typical city municipal contract. And what the city saw it as is by the time they pay a union guy and a truck and all the equipment, they can have a subcontractor do it for a lot less and allows them to focus on the main roads. It's one more guy they can put on a main road, which is really their bread and butter priority. So because we're good at plowing parking lots, we can do it quickly and do it a lot more cost effectively than they can. And then during the time when I was still working for Howard, they made a decision to, hey, let's have a contractor start doing all the cul-de-sacs for us. And so we were first at it and we've been doing it ever since. And now they've added all the dead ends. And so the city realized that every time a truck goes down a dead end, a big municipal truck, 5 ton, six wheelers, it's more of a risk for that large truck to back down on. They're tight and not efficient at doing it. So we're kind of a tool in their toolbox as far as that goes. They can take over all the main streets and take care of those. And we can prioritize on getting all the cul-de-sacs and the parking lots finished.
Fantastic.
And it's a split contract. So it's 2 separate contracts. One's a seasonal, one's a per push. So it kind of
even better.
It's even better for us because it kind of splits the risk and dynamic there.
That's a good lead into kind of the contract mix. Do you tend to be kind of 50-50 with seasonal revenue versus per occurrence revenue, and are you in caps and floors, or how does that work?
Yeah, so I'm at 60-40 split, so 60% seasonal, 40% per push. I probably actually grown this year. I've kind of upped the seasonal game, so I'm probably closer to 70-30 by looking at my numbers. And most of my contracts have a cap. I have very few. When I took over from Howard, he didn't have a lot of caps on his. So when I took over, I started adding caps for the top side. So typically, a typical contract for us is our average is around 30. Our caps are around between 45 and 50. That kind of gives some protection. And so that's the way our seasonals are structured. And it kind of allows us to kind of share the risk of winter. Right. It's been a good mix. And it's funny, every year I say, oh, I need to get more seasonals. And then coming off of this year, I have more seasonals. I'm like, I need to get a few more per push.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you don't have to be 50-50. I've done a lot of kind of scenario analysis, and honestly, 70-30 or even 30-70 is okay. If my preference would be a little heavier on the seasonal. So I like 60-40 or 70-30, but I wouldn't want to go 80-20 or 20-80. I think that's a little bit too heavy, but I think as long as you're somewhere in there, I think you're good. What about geographic area? Are you coming in the city and doing things, or are you just staying out in Elsin?
No. So we kind of, when I was with Howard, we kind of went all over. We didn't go very far, but so King County is the county that's just west of Cook County, which is where Chicago's at. Mm-hmm. City of Elsin actually has some Cook County in it. So we creep into Cook County, but we try to stay in that Kane County market. Chicagoland has a ton of big players in the snow game, and they go all over. So I realized real quickly that driving in a snowstorm isn't very efficient, and to have crews all over is kind of difficult, especially when you're a smaller company. So I really tried to hone things down to where we're geographically real tight. And it's why we're able to kind of take care of that city contract really well, because we have all these other contracts that are right in the local area. So in any given time, I have, 15 pieces of equipment in the city of Elgin at one time.
Yeah, it's really nice to have that density. Well, I want to move toward technology and equipment stuff. So let's talk about technology. What are you using for software, GPS, cameras, any other kind of technology things that come to mind that you want to talk about?
We use site photos for the app as far as kind of site documentation. We chose it just because it's the ease of use. It doesn't require fill out a ton of lists, just a picture to kind of prove our service. We have GPS in all the machines and trucks. I use Easy Fleet, which is kind of a not very popular GPS, but it's just a company that's out there, provides me decent data. And then I have two-way radios in all the machines. So every machine has a two-way radio service that I pay for, which has been really helpful as well.
Okay. I think the two-way radios work really well for smaller operations, but I think it's unusual. I don't see too many people that have them these days.
You know what? It cut down my cell phone being blown up during an event, and it really helps, believe it or not, and help with camaraderie in the team.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting to the point where everyone was kind of their own entity, and I would get guys coming back to the shop, and they would just call me when they're in their car leaving, hey, we're all done. I'm like, well, John over here on the other side of town is the machine's been down for 3 hours, but because they didn't communicate that to him directly, they didn't know. And so the two-way radios now allow those guys to hear that sort of thing when it's happening live, and it allows them, like, hey, we're all done. You want us to head over there and help that guy out? Yes, perfect. So it's not something that I planned for, but it's definitely a good kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, kind of a good outcome of getting the two-way radios.
Yeah. Yeah, the first big snow company I worked for had two-way radios in all the trucks and at the main office where the dispatcher was, but it was right during the beginning of the Nextel wave, and everyone was so into their Nextels, they stopped using the two-way, but the two-ways were there, and every now and then someone would say something over the two-way. I'm like, well, where'd that voice come from? What is that?
Right.
Oh, it's that little box on the wall. I guess I should go over there and grab that thing. They were just great.
And these ones are based on self-service, so they're unlimited range, because, you know, country to cut, or you can be in different states and get clear as day reception.
Sweet.
So
yeah,
they work awesome.
All right. So I know what everyone, half the people on this call listening to this podcast want to hear about your equipment. So walk us through your fleet.
Exciting stuff. I'm definitely one of those guys. So I'm an equipment guy at heart. Obviously, coming from an excavating background.
All right, let's go. What do you got?
So John Deere's our main equipment source. The pride of our fleet is the John Deere 244, kind of compact mini loader. I went to a SIMA conference very early on when I was still working for Howard, and I sat down at a table. Jay Peterson grading out of Iowa. If you're still out there somewhere, I appreciate your feedback, because you launched your company into a great place. He gave me advice. I was at a snack and chat table. He's like, I got this compact motor and it's running circles around our big loaders. And so I went back to Howard at the time. I go, you know, we're getting new equipment. We were just about to purchase 5 skid steers. And I said, why don't we try these little motors? And he's like, sure. He kind of trusted me when it came to equipment. So we tried 2 John Deere wheel motors, and I was in one of them. I ran that machine and it changed the game. Low speed, everything else, it changed the game, especially when we went to doing the cold sex. Now we're able to road machines down the street. Guys have safe visibility, fuel savings, because it's not just jammed on the throttle the whole time. There's a bunch of benefits to having those compact wheel loaders. So since then, we've pretty much got rid of the majority of our skid steers and gone all compact wheel loaders. So we have 5 244Ks. I got 1 244L. A 324L, 2 344Ls, and a 244P now. So all John Deere. And then this year, we made a kind of decision. We're going to try out Nest Leasing. And there's some partners of mine, they made the suggestion to try Nest. And actually through some of the guys in that Hill Snow discussion group that we have, starting to use them as well. And so we gave it a shot. So this year we have 2 case 321s and 2 case 621s. And we're trying, been happy with that agreement so far. It's been a cost savings to us as far as equipment goes. We still do have a couple of skid steers. I do run 5 trucks that have mainly salters on them, but pickups and that plow for me. And I also have a Peterbilt that has a 5-air square.
Oh, nice. What kind of pusher boxes are you pairing up with on those 244s?
So mainly running Snow Wolf on a lot of my stuff, but I'm a equipment guy, so I try everything. So I have a cage plow. I got a Snow Wolf Bass Ditch. I got a Snow Wolf Quattro. I got a Metal Plus 1016. I have a Metal Plus Live Box. I got Arctic pusher boxes. I got Arctic HDs. Kind of. I got the gamut. I try them all. Moving forward, we get more Metal Plus plows or Arctic pushers. We're not tied to any one brand, but we found that those would work best for us.
Okay. You're not doing any brine, are you, liquid?
We're trying.
Okay.
We've been trying brine for a long time. We do a little bit of spraying, but most of our brine is in the form of saddle tanks. So we spray brine at the spinner.
Got it.
to try to help with our salt consumption.
Okay. All right. So you mentioned Snowfighters Institute, and that's obviously, you know, where we got to know each other. And it's cool to hear your story about John Allen, you know, the founder of Snowfighters. And John's still out there kicking around. I see him at the SIMA symposium every now and then. But how did you decide to get involved in, like, going to SIMA or getting involved in Snowfighters? And so what advice do you have regarding those?
Yeah, so I kind of took it upon myself. Howard was a part of SIMA, but he didn't really do too many SIMA shows or anything. And so I looked into it. Of course, everyone that kind of is in the snow business probably has heard of SIMA. So when I heard about the symposium, I'm like, can you send me? And he sent me my first one. And that's when I learned about the compact wheel loaders in it. It was awesome to get around people that are in your same frame of mind. And I soaked all that in, and I loved it. So that continued on. So then I was just looking for other stuff. So then Snowfighters Institute came when, you know, SIMA gets to the point where as you grow as a business, that maybe they don't provide as much value with certain classes, but the networking stuff. So then I went to Snowfighters and I gave that a shot. And that's part of the reason why I went to Snowfighters. And that's when I kind of knew I was going to be taking over the business. So I went to the sales forum. I hadn't been a salesman at that point, so I knew I had to kind of work on that side of my dynamic as far as the business owner. So went to that, enjoyed that. I always try to find the next best thing. The Storks event is the next thing I'm looking into. And that seems to be taking off. I want to do that.
I'll see you there if you make it. I'll be there.
Perfect. Yeah, it's, you know, the industry is great when it comes to the networking. And I encourage everyone. I've always told, but, you know, anyone that's starting a business around me, it's like, why are we trying to reinvent the wheel? There's so many successful people in our work and really any trade that want to share all the knowledge. And it's stupid for us to try to, you know, pound sand to try to get to a place that we don't even know where we're going when someone's already done it for us. And we just need to kind of model that to some degree and make it our own, but we'll share all the knowledge. And so absorb it all. You know, listen to every podcast, listen to, go to every event. I'm all for it.
And there's a bunch of really great podcasts out there now. So, and more resource than there ever has been before. So that's great advice. Just whatever you can digest, go for it. What I found in the snow industry, to begin, you know, it's a small industry. Once you're into it, you realize you kind of start seeing the same people over and over again, because it's a brotherhood, you know. And what I think is really cool is I have not met a single person in our industry. Maybe they're out there, but I haven't met them who isn't willing to share with others. And I just feel like it's an open forum. Maybe someone in your own neck of the woods, you know, a direct competitor. Okay, fine. You're not going to give them your contract. But I'll tell you what, you know, you go to a national events or a snowfighter event, everybody's an open book. You know, here's what I do. Here's what I have. I'll send you this. I have this. I tried this. It didn't work. This is working great. Like, you talk about the John Deere 244s. Like, okay, well, that's your experience, and you're an equipment guy. So to me, if I'm not an equipment guy, I'm taking that to the bank. I'm like, I'm going to stop right there. Like,
right.
You just did all the research for me. I don't need to spend 100 hours figuring this out. I'm going to take what you did and run with it. Take your experience. So, no, good advice.
And what it comes down to, too, is, you know, so many of these business owners have already faced these challenges. The challenges that in your mind are so big and that you're trying to get over, it's like, that's such a small challenge to some of these other companies that are willing to share, like, oh, here's this piece of advice. And it just opens up a world of, you know, opportunity for you, because it's like this big challenge that you thought was a big challenge is kind of small potatoes to some of the other guys that you're getting advice from.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, you think about the differences. Some companies, you know, they can't hire anybody, and then other companies are fully staffed and they have a waiting list. And like, well, what are you doing that we're not doing? And there's usually some pretty important things that the successful company is doing, but maybe that same company is struggling with something else that somebody else has figured out. So it's just a matter of, like, asking the right questions, paying attention, and, you know, being transparent enough to kind of ask for help. Are you optimistic about the future?
I am. You know, especially when it comes to snow, we're pretty solid when it comes to the economy. That's another reason why I enjoy this business, because we don't have the ebbs and flows. It's not like mulch or planting a tree or some landscaping side where they can kind of hold off. Snow's a necessity. I consider it an emergency service. I don't see it going anywhere for a while. And I just see less and less tradespeople in all trades. So there's just going to be less and less people willing to do it. And so if those of us that are willing to kind of buckle down and take over, I think that there's plenty of opportunity there for us to kind of continue to grow and be successful.
Yeah. I'm similarly optimistic. I see the investment that has been made in the industry in terms of technology and equipment and just big leaps of technology gain over the years that I've been in the industry. It's been super cool. And I think it's becoming more sophisticated and more technology driven. And so I can only imagine what AI and robotics are going to do in the next 5 and 10 years. We've been talking about, automated things for 20 years, but I think now we're actually going to get somewhere instead of just dancing around it. But I'm excited as well. I think it's going to be, I think there's a really great future for the industry, and I'm just super excited to be part of it. Do you plan to go to a symposium this year?
I do. Yep. I plan to go to symposium. Nice. We talk about liquid. I do plan on getting more heavily involved in liquids. I plan on being on the forefront of the growth of the industry. So whatever that means, using metal plus plows, using active edges, live edges, using liquids, trying to kind of stay ahead of that game.
And
this is something that we're going to continue to do.
So we're recording this on March 5th, and here in Grand Rapids, it's about 60 degrees today. Is winter over? Get out your prognostication hat. Is it done, or do we have another storm coming?
I think we got a little more coming, but it's the same here in Chicago. We were gangbusters there for a little while, and it's just the faucet shut off. But March is March, and one thing I know about winter is
that's what makes it fun.
Yep, exactly. So we're ready to tackle anything. I know I'm not taking spreaders off, that's for sure. So stuff's staying ready. We're staying equipped, and we're going to be ready to tackle whatever comes this way.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Thank you so much. I appreciate you being here, brother. Always good to chat with you. It was great to hear your story and hear about your company, and we appreciate your time. Hope it does snow again. What's your website?
GreatLakeSnow.com is our website. At Great Lakes Snow for Instagram. You can usually find me on Instagram. You can ask me questions about wheel loaders or anything else. I'm always here to kind of help the industry as much as it's helped me. So,
all right. I'm going to hike you down.
All right.
All right, Steve. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Snow Fighters Institute podcast. Subscribe so you don't miss future episodes, and check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.